Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Orange Chair Podcast. Today's episode is part one in a series discussing AI in the B2B space. Joining us today to discuss these topics is Jim Wanner, CEO of Keymark, and special guest Anthony Masiola, an expert in the automation industry. Now, without further ado, let's begin.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Jim Wanner. I'm the CEO of Keymark, and I am pleased to be here with my friend Anthony Masiola. We have known each other for probably the better part of 18 years and have worked extremely well together and have done some amazing things within the what we call now the artificial intelligence machine learning space. So Anthony's joining me today. We're going to give you guys a heads up as to how we got here within this artificial intelligence era. And we're going to give you some vision as to where we can go with this and how you could apply it in a mission-critical application to make you and your organization thrive going forward. So without any further ado, I'd like to hand this over to my friend Anthony and let him introduce himself.
Thanks, Anthony. Jim. Thanks a lot, Jim. It seems like we've known each other for a million years, right? We've been doing this for a very long time. For those of you who don't know me, I've been doing this for a million years. I started in what was the capture market probably in the late 80s, early 90s, back when imaging was being done on mainframes with FileNet and IBM. But I was with Kofax for about 25 years. I was employee 34. For the last 15 years, I was there. I was their CTO who ran their advanced research lab and was responsible for the introduction of a lot of their industry-leading products like Capture and their Capture SDKs and VRS and KTM and some of those things. After leaving Kofax and taking a little bit of break, I spent 6 years with Abby as their chief innovation officer and helped take them out and beyond the OCR space into their current leadership role position in the IDP market, and had a lot of success bringing a brand new product to market for them called Vantage. So I've had the good fortune to be able to play with some of the big players in the industry over the last 20, 25 years. And I've had a very good fortune to be able to work with some of the best partners in the industry like Keymark have a lot of joint success over the past 10, 15 years.
Great, thank you, Anthony. If you could do me a favor with your extensive background and understanding as to where we are today, could you just give everybody a snapshot over the last couple of decades as to how we actually got to where we are today, and give them some ideas as to the origins of this wonderful technology that we now call artificial intelligence?
Yeah, it's interesting to see the role capture has played in the emergence of AI, right? I remember back in the mid-90s, creating something called VRS, which back at that time used neural net technology to optimize image processing, right? Back when no one knew what neural nets meant, I remember introducing in the early 2000s classification for the very first time and using support vector machines back then to be able to auto-identify the kind of document that you're looking at, right? Back then, it wasn't called AI. No one knew AI from, you know, the doorknob. But we've deployed throughout the evolution of the capture industry what people know and love now as AI for ages. The ability to extract fields from forms. Today, people would call it key-valued pairs. We were doing stuff back then way before the concept of key-valued pairs ever existed, right? So it's interesting. I'm on calls today when I'm talking to people who are noticeably younger than me and schooling me on what AI can do for documents based and assuming like old guys like us, Jim, or I won't lump you in with me. Old guys like me don't.
I'm in that category.
Don't know anything about this, and we've been doing this forever, right? How you do it?
Isn't it fun when you get challenged? Like, do you really know this stuff?
Absolutely. You know how people are solving the problem. The technology tends to change and evolve and mature, right? And that's all good. But we've been having to solve these problems for 25 years. And it's interesting, if we get a chance to get into it, you know, a lot of the new AI enthusiasm and hype that's out there completely overlooks some of the challenges that we've had to deal with over the past 25 years, like predictability, trainability, all of that, privacy, right? Yeah. Things that for us we've known are deal breakers, which a lot of the new entrants into the market who are leveraging advancements in AI have just either been ignorant of that or just conveniently ignored it, hoping it wouldn't be an issue. It's going to be interesting to see how all this stuff emerges.
So to summarize, we really got started in this new artificial intelligence area using intelligent document processing, which is something that you know extremely well and you've been doing for the better part of a few decades and successfully doing so. So if you look at it in the past and now you see what's happening, has there been a dramatic shift with what's going on in today's world so that the intelligent document processing market could change over the next 18 months, or do you think it's going to be static?
No, I think there's going to be a major disruption in what we all now call the intelligent document processing market, right? The IDP market, for a million years, it was called the capture market. Now, because of this renaissance, this rebirth, there's a new name, there's new entrants, there's all sorts of things, right? The biggest challenge with the IDP market or the capture market has been the cost, effort, expense associated with setting stuff up and maintaining it, right? And as a result of that entry cost being fairly high, the market adoption was limited, right? It had to be big deployments because you need to be able to do this at scale to justify it, right? And a lot of the older approaches that were very reliable and very predictable were rules-based. And if you were willing to take the time to learn what the rules were, to set them up and to maintain them, they actually worked reasonably well. But there was usually a big dollar sign tied to setting these up, and the time to value because of that effort required was pretty drawn out. And for some customers, that represented risk, because you'd have to go a while before you saw any fruit from your investment, right? A lot of the advancements, the people who are going to employ AI correctly and put it in service to solve IDP challenges, the people who do that correctly are going to dramatically impact that upfront setup cost effort. Matter of fact, I fully believe that before we exit 2023, processing structured forms, parsing them, getting information out of them, parsing semi-structured forms like invoices, bills of lading, explanation of benefits, will come very, very close, if not achieve a zero setup environment. So with multimodal transformation and pre-built models and all of the new transformation technology that's coming out in the AI space, putting those together, supplementing them, complementing them, putting them in a way that you can deploy them effectively in a traditional IDP environment is just going to blow the doors off setup and maintenance, and make time to value and so much faster and have a dramatic reduction in total cost of ownership, which for us, you know, providers, partners, solution providers is, I think, is just going to explode the market opportunity for us going forward.
So you're talking cost. I get the feeling that there's more than one cost associated with this. So I think that what you're chatting about is there might be some software costs associated with it, some implementation costs for technical people. But I get the feeling that what you're really alluding to is maybe the cost from the end user's perspective to gather samples. Is that what you're heading with this?
That's definitely one of the elements, right? I remember we both joked about it, right, Jim? You go into a customer and say, hey, can I get, and you try to guess what the right number to say is so they don't lose their mind. Can I get 20 samples?
Yeah.
Can I get 30, right? And I can't tell you how many calls I've been in where the customer throws up their hands. I have no idea where I'm going to get 30 samples. So, okay, can I get 10, right? Can I get 5, right? So, and then when they, you know, commit to doing it, it's like pulling teeth, trying to get them and try to get them redacted. And so it's always been a challenge on the customer's part. You know, you go back 18 months, 24 months to when deep learning was kind of the thing. And now you're not going in and asking for 20 or 30 samples. You're in asking for 5,000 samples because deep learning models need a lot of data, right? So the problem access for a little while went in the wrong direction, right? Where it's swinging back to, the visibility I have is, yeah, I won't need any samples. I've built general purpose models for invoices or EOBs or bills of lading, either based on large public training data sets or just the technology that I'm using only needs 50 or 60. And I've already gotten those and I've already built them, right?
So they could use our existing infrastructure to actually build a model going forward.
Yes. Actually, I would say one slightly better. If you pick the right partner and you pick the right vendor, they should be able to provide you baseline models that out of the box are getting you precision recall F1 scores in the low 90s. So your out of the box experience doing nothing should probably be at par or better than some of the systems you've probably been using in the past that have been set up and trained, right? Yeah. And then your ability to do minor fine tuning, you know, because maybe your documents are somewhat unique. That's almost a real-time ongoing experience that you can benefit from by just using the system. So again, it speaks to time to value, right?
So, Anthony, that's at least a 10% increase over the elaborate rules-based systems that we built in the past. So if I'm a customer and I hear all the hype that's out there today, and I'm trying to figure out what is fact and what is fiction, and I'm trying to decipher what I should really be pointing towards, how is somebody going to get a tangible value from this IDP solution? What could they look for?
So, if you haven't heard about GPT, I don't know what island you're living on right now, right? So everyone's talking about generative AI. Everyone's
even my 89-year-old dad knows it, Anthony.
There you go, right? And everyone's heard about large language models, right? And guess what? They're going to end all wars, and it's going to resolve world hunger, right? And you just got to let the hype curve follow its course for a little while. But when you're sitting there thinking about large language models are going to solve all of my IDP problems, ask yourself a couple of questions. The large language models are always going to give you an answer, right? And they're going to give it to you very convincingly. How do you know the answer is right? Right? What level of confidence do you get from a large language model that the answer is right, right? So around predictability, which in the IDP space, the level of accuracy that we're held to, you know, you want You want straight through processing levels in the 80% range. You want S scores in the 95% range, right? How do you even measure your answers to determine whether or not you did a good enough job? And you know, the one question that always gets asked in the IDP space, right? Because people just know this. What happens when it doesn't work?
Yep.
Right.
Well,
the question that leads up to what happens when it doesn't work is the question, how do you know if it didn't work? Right. So people spend a lot of time building human in the loop experiences for what we do, right? Whether it's for validation or QC, right? So any of the AI technology that you're deploying, if it can't come back and tell you confidence levels relative to table extraction or field extraction or sentiment analysis or document extraction, you're kind of running blind and you just got to hope it was good enough.
Ouch. That's never a solution, especially mission critical or health related.
Well, yeah. And as we know, right, Jim, it's hard to do one of these deployments and not have SLAs associated right. with it. I don't know how you commit to any sort of SLA using a lot of the large language model stuff, because it just doesn't provide you that level of insight. The other thing is fine tuning, right? We all know customers have unique environments from time to time, and what you might do from a general purpose standpoint may need to be refined and adapted to accommodate that. How do you fine-tune a large public language model?
Sounds like a security issue, Anthony.
It does, and that was the lead up to the next one, right, Jim?
Yep.
Are you comfortable with putting your patient records or your financial documents up through OpenAI into the public cloud, right? So being able to run securely and protect the privacy of your customers' information, be able to ensure the accuracy and predictability relative to you processing their data effectively, and being able to fine-tune their deployment to their environment. Those are just a couple of examples why just following the hype curve is going to leave you underwhelmed and hurting. I don't want to diminish or leave people with the sense that I'm downplaying AI. There's underlying transformation technologies that are enabling things like ChatGPT that are amazing. There are ways to use those, not leveraging large public language models, but using multimodal approaches to doing this that can produce very, very impressive prediction and outcome results while maintaining predictability, while maintaining trainability, and while maintaining privacy. So everyone should be very excited about all these advancements in AI. They just need to understand the right applications of those technologies to solve their IDP challenges.
I get the feeling you have a few vendors in mind who are doing this well. How do you see this landscape changing? Because you talked a little bit about our legacy applications, and it seems that you're looking to the future. You might have a couple of ideas regarding what this vendor landscape might look like and how they might map out new solutions in a new way. And I guess that's part of that transformation you mentioned in the very beginning.
Yeah, there's almost like a couple of different buckets here, right? You've got the older incumbents that have been around. I don't need to use their name. We all know them, right? Yep. The 800-pound gorillas in the market, they've done an excellent job, right? But they've kind of become antiquated, and they're kind of weighed down under their own technical debt. And the fact that they've got such large customer bases that expect things to work the same way, they've made investments in them, right? They just can't throw everything else. They can't throw everything out. So it'll be interesting to see how they adapt to what's happening in the market. You've got kind of a newer, kind of second generation wave of early entrants that have started to play with AI around this, and many of them are kind of adapting, and I'm shocked, kind of jumping on the GPT wave, that they're just going to leverage that. And I would have expected them to understand some of the shortcomings that they're going to have to overcome. It almost feels like there's a second wave of vendors out there that are looking for the GPT checkbox in their marketing material, who see that as more valuable as actually solving problems. And then there's a third wave of early entrants that I'm watching right now, very small. Don't know if they'll all be around a year from now, who knows? But the approach they're taking, because they don't have technical debt, and they've come late enough to the game where there's enough advancements in AI out there that if they understand the IDP market and they can take those technology advancements and apply them in the right environment, supplement them, complement them, and fill in the gaps around some of the areas that I mentioned, I think are well positioned to disrupt the market. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, if we go out 18 months and look at the normal analyst magic quadrants.
Oh boy.
I'm guessing 12 to 18 months from now, there'll be guys on that list, either in the challenger or upcomer space that no one knows about today. And I bet you 24 to 36 months, some of those guys will be in the leader quadrant. It's going to be an interesting evolution to watch.
That's quite a transformation to go that far in 2 years.
Yeah. And it's all about the pace of advancements from the technology standpoint, right? But there's another component to it, because there's a lot of fantastic companies out there with great technologies that never made it long term, right? So it's about picking the right go-to-market. It's about picking the right ecosystem. And I think, Jim, you know, companies like yours, Keymark, play a pivotal role in the evolution and the transition of the market going forward, because new technology entrants need a route to market.
Yeah, true.
Right? And the dumb ones are going to try to recreate that route to market themselves. The smart ones will realize their prowess and their value is around the technology and enabling the right channel with the industry domain expertise, the sales, marketing, fulfillment capabilities, and empowering them and enabling them to bring this to market.
There's a lot to be said about that one. We fundamentally believe that hyperautomation is still the way to go forward, that these tools as standalone applications will not ever be able to be successful.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Orange Chair Podcast. Stay tuned for our next episode of the Orange Chair Podcast to hear a continuation of this conversation centered around AI in the B2B space. This podcast is brought to you by Keymark Inc., experts in automation software for over a quarter of a century. Never miss an episode by subscribing to our channels wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find us on Instagram at the Orange Chair Podcast. For more information, please visit our website at keymarkinc.com. That's KEYMARKINC.com. Until next time.